This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. This is Rogue. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Hello, my fellow superhumans. I am Jeff Gibbard, broadcasting to you live from Shareable FM headquarters right here in sunny Philadelphia. And I am pumped to bring you another episode of Rogue, the only podcast where I don't just interview superheroes, I steal from them. Every episode, I bring on a guest who has a real-world superpower, a mindset, a craft, a way of being. And then I get close enough to break apart their unique ability so it can be understood, rebuilt, and stolen. I don't just ask questions. I go line by line through their operating system until it's yours for the taking. Listen to ignite your superhuman spark and leave powerful enough to change the world. Now, let's get to know today's superpowered guest. Turn your camera back on. It's time for us to do this.
Hey.
Yvonne Alston, welcome to Rogue, a much anticipated, much awaited episode. Not just for the listeners, not just for the audience, but you know, for me, this is like the time I wait for, is to spend time with you. How cool that my last episode was with Chris Lynn, that I got to go back to back Chris Lynn to you. Come on now.
Oh my gosh. High five and hip bumps on that. Yes. Yes. Fantastic. I'm so excited to be here. I'm happy anytime I get to talk to you, spend time with you, promote your fabulous book, promote the Superhero Institute, all those things. And of course, yes, we have a shared love in the amazing Chris Lynn. And I'm just so grateful, because if it weren't for Chris Lynn, I wouldn't know you. Like, he was our connector.
Wait, did we meet through Chris Lynn, or did yes. I meet Chris through you? I couldn't remember the order of it.
No. You met Chris. You interviewed Chris on a podcast a zillion years ago. And then he was like, hey, you should know Yvonne Alston, who I'm collaborating with. And that's what did it. Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Okay. So for listeners, context, when Yvonne and I get on the phone, usually it is us just having a ball of a time catching up, talking about everything from, like, you know, we never stay in the shallow end. It's like, it usually takes us all of like a minute and a half to get super into the deep end. We talk about the world. We talk about politics. We talk about life. We talk about love. We talk about relationships. We talk about all manner of things. And a lot of the time, I've come to you for advice on things. Some of the times you've come for me on advice on things, but that's it's always like this really great time that we have. Today is one that's a little bit different than our normal thing, because we actually have to stay on the rails a little bit, as opposed to just like
constrain. I have to constrain myself. Like,
yeah,
whew, it's hard.
We normally can just do our thing,
but you know, I think I could do it. I think I can contain myself.
Well, I'm going to have to be the one that's most disciplined here, because I have to keep us on track, because today I brought you on for a very special reason. That is that I want to steal one of your many, many superpowers. And I had the idea of having you on Rogue, like, honestly, like 2 years at this point. I went on hiatus and I finally brought the whole thing back. And like, I've been waiting for this episode, and you have so many superpowers. But today we discussed a number of different options, and you brought up the idea of talking about turning intention into impact, and that there's this sort of key secret ingredient there that's needed. And this is much aligned with the work that you do. And so I wanted to distill that and take it from you in a way that people can utilize in their lives, because it takes intention and it turns it into real impact. And we all know that I, founder of Super Impactful, am very into the impact. So thank you for coming on and letting me steal your abilities. And so let's just jump right into it. I have a bunch of notes over here, questions I want to ask you. I'm going to be taking notes over here as you say things. It's my job to distill what you do into a recipe that can be stolen. So you just have to keep being your lovely self. So tell us about this superpower. When you say turning intention into impact, what that mean? What do you mean by that? It seems like it would be an obvious thing to work out from the words involved. But tell us about it, maybe by going through a little bit of what you do, what your background is, what you focus on with people, so that we have some context for what we're going to learn today.
Yeah. So I will say that starting off with Indelible Impressions Consulting, which is my baby. We are a little bit just over 6 years old now. The work that we do, we have come to understand that essentially organizations rise higher when people, purpose, and performance align in both very measurable and meaningful ways. And so the work that we do is really centered around partnering with clients to help them transform how people within organizations connect, how they lead, how they perform to turn real complexity, everyday complexities, into clarity and alignment into whatever they need in terms of measurable results. And so we do that work, as you know, with our heads and our hearts, through also data, informed data, evidence-based strategies, emotional and human intelligence, and above, I shouldn't say above all else, but along with practical application. So when thinking about my own superpowers, I would say that the superpower we're talking about today, turning intention into impact, is really around helping people and organizations to see what's true, right? Without shame, without blame, without defensiveness. Because once we can see clearly and we understand what it means to have a particular intent, we can choose differently as to how that gets translated into real impact. You know, you and I have talked about, and I think anybody in the sphere of organizational leadership, organizational health, et cetera, understands the difference between intent and impact, right? But what we want to do is kind of flip that a bit on its head to say, hey, your intentions, if you can start off in that right space, you can actually have the impact that you desire instead of going into conversations and different engagements, just navigating them haphazardly and ending up with less than an ideal impact upon individuals, upon teams, upon productivity, and all of those other aspects in the workplace.
One of the things that I have appreciated about you from the get, like from the moment we met, is that you have so many gifts in this space of doing this, but I've always loved how you blend and balance that you're leading with heart and with intention of kindness and like workplace respect and all of the good things that we want, like ethically, morally in a space, right? That you lead with that, but that you never shy away from saying, well, let's also talk about the data and the reasons and the actual evidence based around why we do this. And I think that that's a rarity, because I think sometimes it's much easier for people to lean into one or the other. Either you're like, we do this because it's the right thing to do, or we do this because the data shows it, right? And you're very good at blending both of those two. And that's something I definitely want to, I'm gonna poke at and try to understand better throughout the course of this conversation.
Sure.
I want to understand a little bit about the, we're going to be talking about the superpower in terms of like the benefits it brings. Can we paint a bit of a picture of what does it look like in the absence of this superpower for people who maybe what are people going through right now where they might need this superpower? What might it look like if someone's a leader in an organization, and why would they need the superpower that you're about to explain to us? What is it saving them from? What's the bad stuff right now? Not just the, what's it going to give us on the other side, but like, has it hurt right now that feels like we don't need this?
Yeah, let's go to that part and then we'll get to how it benefits them. So, you know, when we think about intention, this particular superpower, when leaders in particular, when they do not have the ability to truly connect between what it is that they intend to message, what it is that they intend to help make people feel, right? That can cause a disconnect that people are very much looking for these days. Like, you can't read an article on LinkedIn, on Harvard Business Review or MIT Sloan without them talking about the dynamics of relationships. Relationships, vulnerability, introspection, self-awareness, all of these key facets. And so when leaders don't have that, right, it obscures their ability to understand who their people really are and what their people really need. And when that happens, then you have that deeper disconnection. You have people who don't perform at their best because perhaps they're not allowed to show up as themselves. They're not even allowed to demonstrate their own superpowers within the environment. And so it limits the connection aspect, but it also limits productivity, innovation. It limits overall success for a team and an organization. Flipping that around is when leaders do have this superpower, right? Because most want healthy cultures, they're able to better align the organization's mission, vision, and values, right, to hopefully their own values, and create dynamics and connections with their team where people can be seen, people can be heard, people can show up as the best version of themselves. People can even dissent without fear around retribution or some forms of retaliation. It just creates a beautiful culture and a cohesiveness that are needed for both individuals, leaders, teams, and organizations to be successful.
Help me understand something that I just don't get, that I know that there's a part of you that at one point probably didn't get either, which is... Yeah. Why isn't this just common? Like, why do we even have to teach people this thing? Like, don't we all want to go to work and have good relationships with the people we work with? Don't we want to go and not feel fearful that we might lose our job, or feel that if we don't put pressure on someone that we might be the one to get in trouble? Like, that there's this thing that's causing it not to be the way that you're explaining it, right? And for me, I've never been able to hold a job particularly well. I love working for myself. But every place I ever worked, I just felt that thing, that like uneasiness in the space. And yeah. I wonder why it's not just the common way that we get to know the people that we're working with and we care about them. We have expectations that, you know, that we'll get to know them. I guess what's the misconception driving all of this that stops people from doing in the first place, or the thing that's broken that's stopping us from just making this the way?
Systems. Is the easiest answer, right? Systems as they exist, right? And so this challenge being able to, in the course of this conversation, translating intention into behaviors, into systems, into experiences that benefit the whole and not just the top, right? The other thing is it's how we've been socialized in the business world, right? We take topics like executive presence, for example, right? And what that means and how people feel that they have to perform to show up in order to be taken seriously, in order to have some type of authority posture, all of those things. And so we learned amiss. We did not learn that it was about really that deeper connection with valuing the whole human and not just what they bring to the table. We learned instead to extrapolate from folks. We're here, you're here, it's transactional. We want to extrapolate your intelligence. We want to extrapolate your creativity, your innovation, right? All of those things. But we didn't put a lot of emphasis on who are you? Why are you here? And how do we tap into all of who you are in which to have this deeper connection that could then translate to a better work environment, feeling like you want to be there and not just you're coming in to punch the clock and then, you know, dash out the door as soon as possible. We didn't create environments where people's identities, despite no matter what their identities were, could all speak up and have the same ability to be heard, to be seen, and to be valued. So in a nutshell, it's our societal systems that really design what workplace culture looked like, and it's been broken for a really long time. But thank goodness, it is superheroes like us who are in the midst and here to change that and change that for the better.
I have one more question before I want to get really like personal into how you got into this and how the superpower came about and beginning to understand how you think about it. I have one more question in this line, which is if the problem is the system, if the problem is the narratives that we've learned and the patterns that we're repeating, is our only method of undoing this and changing it to start with what the system wants, backing it out and aligning it with what it is that we're hoping to achieve. And eventually over time, that slowly changes what the system even looks like. Because that's what the only thing that makes sense to me as a systems thinker is that if that's the origin, right, we must first be in that space with them, with the system, right, with what the system wants, and then align that with what it is that we want. It's very similar to my sitting on the same side of the table concept, right? But it's like, you find that. And then over time, you see that like, oh, when we treat people like people, we get what we want at the systemic level of, because I don't even think the system really wants extraction. I think the system understands that extraction of our intelligence and our labor and everything is beneficial to them. But if a case could be made that it's even more beneficial to collaborate rather than to just simply extract, then over time that should change it. Is that, does that kind of align with the way that you think about it? Because again, like the balance I mentioned, I think you get a certain perspective on this that I don't hear from many people, which is like, you are speaking to what they're asking for, but you're also holding firm in the, like, people have value and deserve to be respected, et cetera. So am I thinking of this the right way?
You are. So you actually do have to go into that space with them to understand, right? And I think to change their minds and their hearts about how they see the manner in which they're going about it, right? And also, the other key component that we find is the dynamic of self-preservation and systems preservation. Yeah. And so it's dismantling that at a very foundational level that allows us to get to that point where leaders, executive leaders, can start to see, number one, that what they're doing isn't working and why it's not working, to show them what it could look like, right? And then get to work on transforming that little by slow. But you can't rush it, number one, because they don't believe in it. You've got to make sure that everything you're building and building upon is sustainable over time. And you have to have people who understand, I think, especially at the executive leader, the WIFM principle. What's in it for them? What's not just in it for the organization, but what's in it for them on a personal, individual level? And that is not easy to do. So you need to be able to build not only a sense of subject matter expertise and have them feel comfortable and confident with that, but also trust. Trusting why you're there and that you are on their team. You are on the same side of them as much as you are on the team of individual contributors and others who are responsible for delivering on the mission, vision, and values of the org.
Love it. I love it. Okay. So I got something good there that I'm going to hold on to for later. It reminds me of a thing I've said in the past is be kind to people and be ruthless with systems. You know, or you could look at it as like subtly attack the system in some way or another. But I appreciate that as.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's
really hard because the systems are hardwired, right? They're not just hardwired into organizational structures. They're hardwired into people.
Yeah, and they're so almost invisible scaffolding connected through people upholding an invisible system.
Exactly. And a lot of times people don't even know that they're doing it. So you have to be able to bring a greater sense of awareness to them. But also, and you've heard me talk about Indelible's 4 A's, it's not just the awareness. Like a lot of organizations get very comfortable in the space of awareness. But we talk about acknowledgement, action, accountability, that actually moves them through the cycle of theory to actual change.
So I think a lot of people with superpowers tend to take it for granted. And I think what's fun about this conversation is I know you don't, because we've had enough conversations to know that you have been in this work and you've thought a lot about yourself in this work and your role in this work and the different ways you could do this and how you operate and how you interact with people in sometimes spaces that can be very hostile, some that are very welcoming. And there's like five other superpowers I want to steal from you, but for today, sticking in this, to break down a superpower means you have to have a real deep sense of awareness about, but you also have to kind of imagine that the person you're telling about it has absolutely no foundation in this. So what I want to do is I want to kind of start from the very basis of how you develop this and rebuild it kind of brick by brick so that anybody listening can understand how they can, within whatever space they're in, turn either their own or their organization or their team's intention into actual impact, how they can be more courageous, how they can really work from the end result backwards to figure out how they can create an organization that's ready for that. So I want to start with you and your personal journey to it, the origin story of it. Most superpowers are born in some way out of something traumatic or difficult that's happened to us. We become the people that would have protected us in that situation. And you have this incredible ability to stand in what would be otherwise very uncomfortable conversations with people and standing for that important change to happen, to make that intention into impact. And so I'm curious if you can take us back to maybe the first moment you realized that you had a calling to do something like this. You said, you know, Indelible is coming upon 6 years. I know there's glimmers of all of this in your work prior to this. Can you paint the picture for us of like where it started?
Oh my gosh. So full transparency, it probably started when I was a youth. When I look back on it, my history, my origin story and growing up and the difficult circumstances and dynamics around that. And this is deep excavation work that I've done in therapy. So I know this to be kind of the foundation of where this all started from. I was always trying to broker peace. I was trying to broker peace in the household. And so I would go and hear one person's perspective and then hear the other person's perspective and try to make it all okay. And so learning that at an early age, one, made me grow up, have to grow up really fast, but also helped me to learn more about people. I think that's where I honed not only certain oral skills, but also just being able to read people, be able to look at kind of those social cues and the unspoken dynamics of communication, and then figure out how to navigate that. And again, try to get people to come to some level of consensus. I'm sure that's not the word I had as a youth, but try to work on that. And also understanding what happens when it didn't work, right? What was the fallout? And is it possible to mitigate that? And so I think that through my youth into my teenage years and so forth, I think also when I got to college is part of the reason why I wanted to become an attorney. And my late dad used to always say, like, I think you should be an attorney. You argue really well. And I think that was because I had an environment in which I had to do so. And so I think all of that kind of built me back up into what my career trajectory would be. And then spending so many years, 23 years in corporate America, trying to navigate systems dynamics of you know, conflict and discord and all of those types of things. I think it was just early building blocks in those ways led me to wanting to, one, see people's humanity, which I saw diminish throughout from a youth upward through adulthood, and wanting people to be heard, seen, respected, to have their humanity be honored. So those were the roads. Those are kind of the bricks in the pathway that led me to wanting to and needing to create Indelible.
So the part here that I normally like to talk about is the three different types of ways that superpowers come about, right? There's your Superman, where you're born with it. There's your Spider-Man, something happens to you and it emerges. And then there's your Batman, where you train and you become the world's greatest detective, right? And there's always an element of all three of them in there. And in your story, I'm curious about a handful of things, and I'm just going to ask you some things and ask you to reflect on it. So on the one hand, I think there's a part of you that is the way you are. It is like you are born a daughter of Krypton, and like you have this superpower in your cells, right? So there is a part of that. And then you explain the early situations that would cause you to develop these skills. And then obviously you've worked at it over the years and now it's, you know, your work. This is what you do. And so here's the part I'm curious about is if you reflect on wanting to find and make peace, be the peacemaker at that time, was the reason for it the same or has it evolved since then to what it is now? Because I can imagine in what you've described that a lot of it could have been the safety was because you felt safer when there was peace. It could have been because You saw that somebody wasn't being heard and that made you sad because maybe you at some point didn't feel heard. So there's a lot there, right? But then as you've grown and you've expanded your scope of understanding of people, you've studied people more, you've been in more situations. So the evolved understanding that you now have, the Batman training you've done, allows you to see a broader scope of things, but it has those roots in wanting to be the peacemaker. And I'm curious if you can kind of shed some light on the evolution of what that might have looked like from where it began, the seed of it, into what it is now. Because I think that, I think it's one of the more clear examples of like a thing happens to us and it sets us in motion. It plants a seed that then we can then choose to water it and grow it and flourish it into something. And yours is one of the clearest examples of this. I'm curious what that looks like as you analyze it within your own experience.
Yeah, I would say you're accurate that it started off in the desire to create peace and it evolved into people understanding that everybody has value, even when there's disagreement, even if they're different, even if their perspectives are different. And so that experience as a youth and then going into the workplace as an employee myself and seeing it happen to me, seeing it happen to other people, where other people started to decide the value of a person, one, without really knowing them and all that they were capable of, and kind of creating their own narrative or their own story based on maybe some limitations within themselves, maybe some other intents where they wanted to hold someone back so that they could shine forward. A lot of different circumstances, I think, contributed to that. But that dynamic of value and allowing people to not only realize their own value, and that took me a while to recognize even within myself, and it really took me probably the last 5 years of my corporate career to really understand even more my own value and to not allow it to be put in a box, not allow other people to define me, to develop my own sense of authenticity and who was I really, if not by the trappings of different people's thinking, different people's intentions, sometimes nefarious intents, right? And then wanting that for myself, and then how do I help build that for others? How do I help take these experiences that I both had and witnessed and change how organizations see talent, how they see the value of individuals, how leaders see the value of the humans that they get the privilege of leading to greatness, and not just their greatness, right? But the potential in the people, the greatness and the value of the individuals. And so that's kind of that through line that went from early peacemaker then to, I can't think of a great term for it, but just somebody who really doubled down on the value of individuals.
I love that. And again, going back to your kind of heart-focused, heart-centered leadership, but also saying, and I'm going to bring in the data to prove it. I always really appreciated that. And I think, again, this is another moment where you can make a statement that everyone has value, but if you don't then come with receipts for it, there are going to be people who are skeptical, who are upholding a system that wants to extract from people and may not, you know, actually buy into that idea. So I want to pick apart your entire superpower now, going through my superhuman framework, because there's so much here. Let's start with learning. What's something that people would need to understand at the very beginning? You know what? I need to read a few things that I've captured here. So one, everyone has value. Two, let people define themselves. And three, understand what people are there for, right? So you talked about this, like the what's in it for me principle, right? So I've got a learning piece there and a couple pieces of thinking, and I want to unpack these with you. What's kind of the pathway into this of learning what people are there for, or having, is there something that's even before that, that's like a foundational way of thinking or an understanding that you have to develop before you can even go into this work? Because this statement of everyone having value, like even that, if you don't buy into that before you go into this, it can be really difficult to even care what somebody else is there for. You're like, you're there to do what I tell you. So just do it. So I'm curious, kind of like foundationally, like where would you, what's the first water you would plant on a seed for someone who wants to develop this superpower so that they can take it that first step?
I would say courage. I think courage is one of those things. I often say courage is the currency of culture change, right? Every meaningful shift within an individual, as well as within a system, as well as within a team and an organization, requires courage, because it takes courage to acknowledge something about yourself. It takes courage to hear difficult truths. It takes courage to challenge long-standing norms of maybe your own existence, maybe how you've led, as well as the organizational institution. It takes courage to examine perhaps unintended consequences of going about a thing a certain way or taking risk. It takes courage to acknowledge when impact and intention don't align. And so for me, I would say at the most foundational element, you have to have a sense of courage.
I love this because I have a I want to dig one level deeper on this. So if it begins with courage, awesome. Mm-hmm. The question is, what do you have the willingness to be courageous in service of? What's the thing for, right? So this gets back to a little bit of self-awareness. If you say like the first step for someone in an organization to lead the kind of change where you can turn intention into impact is courage, well then what are you willing to be courageous for? Because courage is seeing fear, being fearful of something and doing it anyway, is to acknowledge that fear and to move forward, right? And so what is the thing, what is it, there are going to be things that you would be scared to move forward with and you just won't because it doesn't matter enough to you. And then there are the things that do. How do you encourage someone to get that kind of clarity for themselves? How do you get them to ground themselves in understanding what's worth being courageous for? And even maybe what a small act of courage might look like?
Yes. Figuring out, I would say, number one, what do you care about? What do you care about, right? Going back to almost when we talk about the what's in it for me, or you take Simon Sinek's why are you a leader? What has caused you to decide that rather than be an individual contributor, that you want to lead people, right? And what, because leadership takes courage, right? It's a wanting to come back to that at a very fundamental level to say, why are you doing this? Why does this matter to you? What does good leadership feel like to you? Not what does it look like to you, but what does it feel like to you? And then allow for people to examine themselves and say, okay, if you were led by you, would you feel that way? And sometimes it's people holding the mirror to themselves in that very intentional way that they go, oh, sugar. Yeah, not so much. Well, maybe that's how I started in my leadership journey, but now I don't even know anymore, right? So it's taking them back to basics on that to reignite that little bit of the fire in the belly as to why you're leading, why certain core tenets of leadership were important to you, and where you lost them along the way. And it's not so much a matter of why did you lose them, but where did you lose them? How do you get them back?
Yeah.
And so helping them with that and to say, what would courage look like for you now? What is the distance between your intention and the impact you want to have? That's probably going to be measured in your courage. What are you willing to take on? What are you willing to change first about yourself? And then, you know, get really super granular on that and then look at it more widely. What would you change about your team? What would you change about the organization? What would you change about the systems that then impact the organization, that then impact you as a leader, that then impact the individual?
I can't help but think that to do this work that you're even talking about is actually the first act of courage. Because to disrupt yourself from the pattern of the status quo, to say, let me pause for a second and actually think about what I care about and what am I willing to learn more about so that I will lead myself on a path to actually being able to take a stand for something that's important. That alone seems to me to be the step that comes even before having the courage, is like the courage to even step into it and do that work.
Yeah. I think it's radical courage to be able to say, I don't have it all figured out. maybe everything that I'm doing is not working all the time. And what are the proof points of that? And then what does it mean to be imperfect? What does it mean to be learning as I go along? What does it mean to be really intentional about the best version of me showing up as a whole human myself? And then being in a position to lead others. And I think it takes courage to look ourselves in the mirror and to have those type of acknowledgments. And yeah. So, but it's the cool thing, I dare say, and I tell other leaders, is that once you start doing it, you get a little bit like hooked on it, right? And so you want to know more, you want to learn more about you. And then that creates more opportunity for vulnerability, transparency. You might be looking to your peer leaders just to say, hey, I think I do this well, but I'm not sure. And I need you to be a bit of a mirror for me. Do I really do this well? And what would you even define as well? What would well look like? And I always go back, what would you want to feel if you were being led by this individual, right? What would you want to experience? And not just, and that's, I will say, now you're getting me going. Now I'm getting like really excited, because the other thing that we oftentimes don't think about, we often talk about our experiences, but we oftentimes don't look at and think about how we're experienced.
Yeah.
And that is key. You have to have courage to give a sugar honey iced tea about how you're experienced.
Yeah, you got to decenter yourself out of your own experience for a second and look at yourself with outside eyes, or be willing to listen to what people are saying from outside
eyes. Yes, and that is so critical to intention and impact. So yeah. You're thinking like, I might have all these good intentions, but if I'm not impacting the way that it needs to be, right, then I'm doing something wrong. Then I think my intentions might be a little bit jacked up, and I got to check those.
Yeah. You said a bunch of words that made me immediately think of someone who I think exemplifies this so well. And obviously I'm biased in this case, but my wife does such a good job of creating spaces where people feel safe and they feel cared for and they feel willing to open up. And part of her magic is her willingness to go first. She will say yes. Something totally vulnerable and open, unashamedly.
Yeah.
Just because she knows that when she does that, it cracks things open a little bit and it creates a space where more people can share and be open. And I think what you spoke about in leaders talking to other leaders is that courage to go first and to ask those questions. It creates yeah. a sense of like, oh, maybe I can ask for that back now that we've had that dialogue. And so subtle changes over time from these little moments of courage. Another thing I want to, call out / ask you about, because you mentioned in passing Simon Sinek's Start With Why, and a couple other things. I'm curious if you have any particular sources of information or books or texts or things that you tend to start people off with as a way of like kind of cracking things open. Like for me, I love the book Essentialism. I love the book 4,000 Weeks. I always find that like when I put my own life in the context of how much time I have here and what it'll mean throughout the course of history, it tends to both make everything feel less significant and also incredibly more significant. And so that for me is a very helpful way of getting in tune with what matters to me. I'm curious yeah. if you have certain things that you think are really helpful for leaders to check in with that help to kind of open them up to start that self-introspection, to get clarity on that thing that they're worth being courageous about.
Yeah. So this is going to be very unconventional, but then I wouldn't be me if that weren't the case. So I will say, I'll speak to this for myself. One for me is therapy, right? Because yep. therapy yep. is something, whether you do it professionally and you have a performance coach, right? It can be considered a form of therapy, or you actually have a mental health professional. It's really important to know who the heck you are and to unpack your stuff. Because a lot of times, and I heard someone say this recently, that we're all a bunch of wounded kids and traumatized kids running around in adult bodies. Yeah. And I think that that is very true. I think that the way that people play out their innermost hardships in adulthood has a significant impact on how they show up in the workplace. and how they lead, and how they encourage or how they create cohesion, how they communicate, all of those things. So I dare say some form of therapy is beautiful for us individually as humans, but it will always have a translation effect to how you show up in other places. You know, for example, at Indelible, we always say this goes with you everywhere your foot shall tread, right? Because the goal is always, while you might be learning this in the workplace, we always say, take this back to your homes, take it back to your neighborhoods, your communities. This is how we affect widespread change. So I think it's the same thing with the therapy aspect. And then the other unconventional source for myself, and this is going to be no surprise to you, Jeff, whatsoever.
I know exactly where you're going. Yep.
You know exactly where I was going, right?
Exactly where you're going. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's my faith. For me, it's the Bible. And I will say there are so many fantastic stories in that book about welcoming people who are different from yourself, about supporting other people without judgment, about how we see ourselves and how we do hold the mirrors for ourselves in order to better understand self. And also, where is the compass of our own hearts and our minds as we're engaging with other fellow humans? So those two aspects are critical for me. I love Simon Sinek's Why. And this is not a shameless plug, because literally I was talking to Tiffany Castaño and my friend Taya Watkins this morning about you and your book, Lovable Leader. Because for me, it was the first book that I felt that love could be talked about and expressed in a professional setting with an intention of heart and mind that very much aligned with my own values. That we are, as Brené Brown always says, we are hardwired for connection, right? And we know this. It starts literally in the womb. There's an umbilical cord, right? There is connection at birth. And so I like those resources, and I like those resources for using them once again as a mirror to self, but it will always come back to your ability to read or acknowledge a thing and use it as a mirror, not use it for justification, not use it to say, oh yeah, I'm doing that. Okay, pat on the back, but to actually use it as a mirror to identify what you're doing well and where your greatest opportunity is for growth. And that's the thing, is if you're a really good leader, you're always growing. If you're a really good leader, you're always holding the mirror to yourself. If you're a really good leader, you actually aren't afraid to go back and ask your people, hey, how am I doing and what could I do better?
I think what's present for me and what you just described is a lot of alignment is, a lot of people could come on and immediately just say like their faith, right? But you started with therapy, and some people come on just say therapy. But I think that the way that you approach therapy and the way that you approach people and being the peacemaker and all of that changes actually how you approach your faith, in the same way that I think your faith probably changes the way you approach your therapy. And so there's a lot of alignment in that, of getting clear on who you are and what you're about and where you're trying to go. Like, trying to create a world that's kinder, safer, and more equitable. I say it so often now that it just rolls off my tongue. I barely even think about it, but that is what I'm at. That's what I'm after, right? And so when people have a very clear sense of where they're going, it becomes a lot easier to have other things aligned to that. I'm curious then, as someone who does that sort of work, encourages people to do that, when you walk into an organization or you're working with someone and you've noticed that there is an incongruency between the intention and the impact, or there's some unwillingness to take accountability for harm caused, or a lack of readiness, or any of the things that you would see as sort of like, that's a flag. One, how do you recognize that? Because good talk is easy, right?
Yeah.
But walking that walk is a lot harder. How do you go about assessing a situation without judging it, so that you can come in and you can actually intervene and help with it? How do you identify when there's an incongruency between intent and impact, and kind of where to go with that?
It's interesting you say this, because right now I'm coaching an organization CEO who sees himself a particular type of way and is very much convinced that he is showing up accordingly. And the data, meaning, you know, interviews that I've had with his team and his cabinet, VPs, et cetera, staff members, it reflects the opposite. But I also understand that that's very difficult to get through to him. So instead, what I've done is I've said, okay, you hold this particular value in high regard, correct? Yes. Okay. And you put that value forward with consistency, right? And the person says, yes. And I said, okay, so help me to understand the disconnect between you putting that value forth and embodying that value consistently and the dynamic of the results that you're getting in your relationships. And that, without being judgmental, asking the questions for people to fill in the gaps between intent and impact is the greatest aha moments. And you have to stay in it and work with them for a while, because oftentimes people won't see it. And some people are really savvy and they'll intellectualize it, right? And so you have to be really careful to keep them in the space to be more reflective and be more focused on the relationship, the relational dynamics of that. So for this particular CEO, I've had to continue to go back to that over and over again of, I don't need to tell you anything, but the goal is for you to figure out what is a disconnect between the two and for you to name the thing. Because if I name it, more than likely, I'm going to be met with defensiveness, because there is this dynamic within them that they feel very, very strongly that they are performing this value. And yet we have all the information to say that it's not landing. And also we have to be very intentional in thinking about performance, because that is a dynamic too. There's a difference between performing a value and living into a value. And so helping them to, one, understand what is that disconnect and what is it that could change in terms of how you're living into it that would actually demonstrate the value and with consistency, so that you don't have to state the value. People will know it's your value because you're living into it and they're experiencing it. So going back to that, what I said a little while ago, of not just the experience that the person, right, the leader might be having, but how are you being experienced?
You just brought up multiple kinds of thinking happening simultaneously, and I want to call out a few of
them. Is that not good?
No, it's good. It's like so interesting because when it comes to thinking, I love thinking about the different ways that we think. We think about things creatively. We think about things strategically. We think about things logically. We think about things emotionally, analytically. We might think about things, through all manner of different lenses. And I like to understand like which types of thinking are useful in different scenarios. But you just brought up like a handful of them, right? Because you might say, you know, think about this analytically. Like here's what you want, and then here's the results. So let's analyze those results. What do those results maybe tell you? Okay, cool. But here are the results and here's what you're intending. Let's think creatively about how maybe we can start to get better results that mirror what our intentions are. You might say, you know what? Here are the results and here's what you're getting. Let's think critically about that. Why might that be, right? So you're invoking all manner of different methods of thinking to unpack and analyze this. And obviously all of the work that we just talked about before that leads up to this, of getting clearer on, you know, what is your intention? Why, what is important to you? What are you willing to be courageous about? All of that leads to a place where you have a lot of tools at your disposal. Is there anything that you found most effective in terms of, I mean, that you brought the kind of the coaching aspect of how to coach people through it and being there with them. Is there any particular method that you found is most effective? Is it showing people the black and white, like, haha, here you go, figure it out. Like, this is what you wanted, this is what you got, you know, there, you've learned it, right? Or is it more a roundabout way? Is it inviting them to like try on seeing things from a completely different point of view? Like, how have you taken people that are performing impact rather than living into it? How do you, what's been your best kind of method that you found?
I would say role playing. is very effective because oftentimes they see themselves sitting in the seat as leader, and they don't often see themselves or contemplate what it's like to be on the receiving end of one's leadership. And so the role-playing aspect can be really interesting and can be eye-opening. I've seen some leaders cringe a bit when I have expressed back what I experienced in their leadership. I've had some argue back. That's not what I meant. That's not what I, and I'm like, okay, great, beautiful. That's not what you meant. So what did you mean? Okay, so do you understand the difference between what you intended and what you communicated and how that actually landed, right? And this is where we start talking about how much words matter and also about slowing down. Sometimes we're just moving way too fast. And so whether that's a discussion around slow brain, fast brain, whether that's a discussion around even you just made me think of one of the other books that I would recommend for leaders is Adam Grant's Think Again. This is a beautiful book of picking apart how we see a thing at one particular space and time when we have certain conditions and certain information, and then how that should evolve over time that allow us to open up those pathways, this beautiful brain that we have with all of its neuroplasticity, that we can actually think again about how we're thinking, how we're feeling, what we've known to be true, that could significantly be impacted and altered based on new information, new conditions, new players and people, those aspects. So I think that that's really important. So we start to retrain the brain to think again. And so I think that's another beautiful tool that can be used to bring about this evolution. But it's about guiding them to the realization themselves. I've been in a position before where I think in my very early years, I used to tell a lot of what it should look like and what it should be. And now I've definitely grown in my greater understanding that that is of very little impact if people don't come to it for themselves. They need that aha moment because that is a different level of motivation.
It's almost like you've applied your own framework to yourself. Brilliant.
Crazy.
I'm gonna pause this at this point just for a second because, as per usual, you and I could talk forever. And I realize we've gone an entire hour, and I still have a bunch of questions left to
Oh
ask you. And I want to be sensitive to. I don't know if you have anything after this that you have
my
to run to, so I don't want to make you late for
yeah.
something.
I do have to dip out because I do have to get to a meeting for what time is that meeting? 3:30. Yes.
Okay, beautiful.
So
I'm going
should we
to,
do a
I have
part two?
so I have so much here. I think what I can do, because I have a really good foundation for your for the
Yeah.
model of how you do what you do, I actually have two questions left that I think we can
Sure, we
get
could do
through,
that.
and then I think I can wrap us on the whole model, because I think there's so much of this that is loaded into the how we think about it going into it, and the things that we have to learn, and the kind of the groundwork that we have to do, that these last two should, I think, be on the simpler side and kind of grown out of it. So the last two questions I have for you, I'll do them one at a time. But how do you have hard conversations with leaders without raising that defensiveness? You brought that up, the importance of words, challenging people without raising defenses. Just from like a like sort of a principles standpoint, how do you go about that in a way where people are receptive to it rather than feeling like you're telling them that they're wrong?
Something you mentioned earlier about what Erica does, I do the same thing. So I start with myself. I talk to them about my own leadership journey and that evolution. And I will specifically, depending on the dynamic with that leader, I will pick something from my own past where I thought I was doing it really well, only to find out that I wasn't, and what that felt like to take that in, to process that, and to get to a place of being able to hear it and process it and decide, is this truth or is this something that can be tossed away, right? But really holding on to as much of it as possible of, I know it might be painful, Yvonne, but does this really benefit you? And understanding that. So that is one of the things that I would do with them to do that. Also, asking more questions, being courageously curious about them, asking more questions than making statements. And I find that that works really well. Because I think it is sometimes in our statements, in our desire to draw people's attention to a thing, how we go about that is what oftentimes can elicit that defensiveness.
Got it. Awesome. Okay. My final question for you then is about action. So looking at concrete steps that we take, the things that we should be doing, what, you know, whether it's a 30-day plan, a 60-day plan, a 90 plan, or just something to do today or tomorrow or this week, when you look at the process of building a team, an organization, or just a person who is more capable of taking their intention and turning it into impact, where is, if we go past the starting point of first figure out what you're interested in, do some therapy, do some self-assessment, get clear on like that part, get your head straight, right? Where you want to go, what do you want to do? How do you want to be taken? How do you want to be seen? What's kind of your first steps of bringing your organization with you?
So I would say, well, part of it has to be accountability, right? And I think that that's really important. Ask me the question one more time. Let me just make sure I'm...
Yeah, so I'm looking at... So I'm going to preemptively do a little bit of like, here's the framework I'm breaking down, is that we have to understand that people have value. We have to understand what we're there for. We have to give people the freedom to be who they are and define themselves.
Yeah.
We have to be willing to be courageous and to coach people and things like that. And as we communicate with people, we want to create a space that is safe for them by, you know, sharing our own side of things and creating connection, right? So we do these things and then we've prepared ourselves to step up and do a bigger thing, to take a bold and courageous action in our organization, in our team, in our home, wherever it might be, right? What would you say is the first, and it doesn't have to be grand, it could be something really small, but when you look at like building out a plan of wanting to change something, where do you start? Know where you're trying, when you know the impact, and you have the intention, where do you start to get there as like your big first step out of the gate?
I would say knowing what the impact is that you want to have, right? And so that can feel quite aspirational sometimes, and mash that up with what you're doing, right? And I think that that in itself will reveal the gap. That reveals where we need to start the work. That will tell us, is your breadcrumbs, if you will, between the intention and the impact itself, what you actually want to do and what does this get us. Also understanding, like, sometimes I think with certain leaders and certain organizations, they think that they actually want one thing when they really do want something else, but they're not clear on that. And they don't know that what they're doing as it exists isn't getting them that. So I think identifying those gaps from the beginning is really key. And I think that understanding that both on an individual level and then an organizational level is really important. It doesn't always have to line up perfectly, right? But there are ways in which you can be moving towards, it's like a symphony, if you will. Everybody plays their different part. You've got the drum section, you've got the woodwind instrument, you've got the strings, you've got this, right? Together, they create harmony. Together, they have impact. But those play different notes. They play different keys. They have their own kind of move to the beat of their own drum, if you will. And allowing for some of that while understanding that harmony is what we're aiming for. So I think starting with that initial analysis and then working backwards the way that we talked about is the best way to go. So identifying your impact, what are our intentions, and then what is the tension and the gap in between, and let that help us design the what and the how of how we get there.
And then just the final kind of like the sub bullet to put a cap on that is, do you tend to look for the biggest impact change you can make, the smallest first step, point of biggest leverage?
I would say micro wins to macro wins, right? Because that also builds momentum, sustainability. It's hard to go for the big stuff right off the bat. But a lot of organizations want to swing big, right? To be able to prove that this is working. But oftentimes, those are the organizations that run out of steam. They run out of momentum. They actually run out of desire to keep going. So it is in the little small wins along the way, having a great alignment in a team meeting, hearing someone that typically doesn't speak up, to be able to speak up and feel heard and seen and be able to acknowledge and witness what that did to the environment, what that did to other people in the room. What did that then spur? Did that spur additional conversations that for some reason weren't easy to be had in times past? Did it spur like great ideas and innovation in a way that's like, oh, wow, we literally saw a people spark happen. And we haven't seen that in a really long time. Are you getting little feedback nuggets that come to you and be like, that was a really great meeting, or I feel really inspired, like I'm excited about this, right? So it's all of those small wins that I think that grow over the course of time. People develop those skills. So when you're ready to swing big, you hit that home run because now you've done all the requisite work leading up to it.
I love it. I'm glad we got here too, because the action question that I was trying to figure out how to ask was around this. Do we take small little wins? Do we find the point of a small thing with the biggest leverage? Do we go for like, no, you gotta get the policies right and then start to, you know, implement it piece by piece. So like, that was a really important part for me to understand how you think it works best, because it also makes it really, your answer at least makes it really tangible. It's like, it's little things that add up to big things over time and slowly evolve and change how, like a harmony, a symphony, you know, you're bringing in whole other sections of horns and strings and things like that. So I think I get it now. I want to repeat back to you what I heard as your framework. I've been taking notes this whole time and trying to get a sense of
that's amazing. I don't know how you do that, but
this is my superpower. So my superpower is I can take a whole lot of information and see patterns in it. And I can see how things work. And so that's why I like this show, because I bring people on, I let them just talk, and then I capture little bits, right? Like that's the critical piece right there. Yeah. So here's what I heard. Okay. Mm-hmm. If we want to take intention and turn it to impact, if we want to practice courageous leadership, in order to do this, we have to start at the beginning, which is we have to first understand what we care about. We have to understand what we have the courage in the first place to do something about. And when we're dealing with other people, we have to understand what they're there for. We have to understand what they're thinking in the context of what's in it for them, because people don't necessarily care about what it is that we want. They care about what it is that they want. So what you're looking for is the thing that you care about so much, but you're also looking about the thing that they care about so much, and hopefully trying to find some place where that overlaps. Another thing that's really important is, even if you care about this thing so much and you believe yourself to be this person, it's really important in this initial phase to also experience yourself. And you do that through things like role play, through surveys, through gathering data, through understanding, so you can then see the gaps later on. But in that initial stage, you're looking for, okay, well, what is our intention in the first place? And you need to also understand what is our actual impact. And that comes from experiencing yourself. So there's this getting clear on yourself, getting clear on others, and getting clear on what's actually true from what it's like to be experienced. The next thing going into that next stage is you have to have the right mindset in place. And that mindset begins with understanding that everyone has value. You see that everyone has value. And if you can see that everyone has value, you can also then have the courage to think the second thing, which is that you're willing to let people define themselves instead of defining them for them. You're willing to ask them questions and learn more about them. And this, you're going to have to do this when you have to understand why they're there in the first place. But that allows you to have the mindset that everybody there has value on your team. Everybody is there for something, and then they get to be the ones to define who they are. And then it's your job, through inquiry and through coaching, to take them from their intent to their actual outcome. So you're thinking through those pieces for both yourself and for those on your team. when it comes to having the communication with the members of your team, it's really important that you go first. That if you're going to be a leader, that you take the courageous first step of going first and opening the door so others are willing to talk and feel safe. And that when they do, you honor that by not making them feel small or defensive, ask lots of questions, make fewer statements. Do that so that you can gather more information. If you've done all of this, then when it comes time to take that action, it should be relatively simple, which is that you're going to look for the outcomes and specifics that you all agree on, that you all want, and you're going to start small, bit by bit, biting those off and trying to make it into the culture that you want it to be collectively. And then you go on to the next one and you repeat the same process of seeing that everyone has value, understanding what everyone wants, and getting to that next bit and that next bit and kind of looping it. That's what I heard from you as how do you turn intent into impact? How do you practice courageous leadership? I'm sure there's so much missing because I honestly could talk to you for another 3 hours. This is how it always goes. I should have known this, but that's what I heard. Did I miss anything critical in that sort of recipe for stealing a bit of this magic you have?
No, I think that that's spot on, right? So it ends up being like this recursive loop that happens, right? That once you figure that out, and also not just in the results you're getting, but also in the aspect of how one feels, right? And that's the other piece that it's both kind of quantitative and qualitative, if you will, right? Yeah. And so it's important to measure both, not just the outcomes, but also how did that experience make people feel? Because that is more likely what's going to get them staying in the game. That's what creates the sustainability. That's what creates the opportunity to duplicate over and over and over again. People want that hit of dopamine. They want to win and they want to feel good while winning.
Yep, absolutely. Yvonne, yes. Thank you so much for coming on to Rogue and letting me steal your superpower. I hope it didn't drain you too much. I know it didn't because I know how our conversations go.
It's all good. Even if it did, you were never my kryptonite. So that's what matters most.
Fantastic. I know you got to jump soon. So tell people where they can find you when Gotham is in trouble.
Yes, absolutely. So you can find us on LinkedIn. You can come see me at Yvonne M. Alston on LinkedIn. You can also go to indelible-consulting.com. And we're always about speaking. We write articles. We publish those on LinkedIn and so forth. So those are the best ways to get in touch with us. Our bat signal is always out there. And so come, you know, look us up, find us, whatever you need. We've got it.
And I am legit, no joke, one of Yvonne's biggest fans. So if for some reason, after putting these in the show notes, you do not take them down, you do not have them, trust me, I will always know how to get a hold of Yvonne. So you can always reach out to me as well and I will connect you. So I'll make sure all that gets added to the show notes. And for anybody who didn't know, the Superhero Institute, we have something called the Rogue Gallery, where this, among all of the other episodes, we take all of these superpowers and we break them into little recipe guides you can download from the Rogue Gallery. So if you join the Superhero Institute, you can get access to that. This episode has been with Yvonne Alston. I continue to be Jeff Gibbard. And until the next one, please keep doing your part to make the world a kinder, safer, and more equitable place. See you in the next one.